good turnout. Not a very good turnout on the candidates list.
I couldn't imagine the people that are already out.
Oh, you mean the candidates, right? Well, who's here?
What's the incentive for them to come?
I'm amazed Sean showed up.
Yes. Six.
I think it's seven.
You want to go by Jim or Jake?
Because you can only see this light for dinner, my dear, okay?
No, Jim is fine.
Okay. You're number seven.
Ten.
Ten.
Hello?
That's a good one.
Chris Feaster.
Right.
Write down any.
I played Fagin and Oliver in your town.
Just take it to 10.
Yeah. I remember that.
Do you remember?
I don't know. My wife went to it. But I remember it.
Do we have to talk into it? Tom, do we have to talk into it to hear it?
Yeah, well, for the radio.
Why? Well, zoom out.
Hello? It's a number. He's got a number, yeah?
Yeah, he's the village trustee in Athens. Herman Rhino. Yes, Ann Myers next to him. He's my neighbor.
Welcome. This is our third WGXC org Meet the Candidates event here in Greene County. We've also had them on Thursday night. We had one in the town of Athens, and yesterday morning there was one here in the town of Catskill. Simultaneously, we're running a similar number of events in Columbia County. This all ties in with the mission of WGXC, which is setting up as a community-run, not-for-profit radio station. We recently received a $71,000 matching grant from the U.S. Department of Commerce, so everybody will be hearing from us about further fundraising events and fundraising in the future. Today's event is being moderated and run by the recently revived Greene County League of Women Voters. under the direction of a wonderful woman, Fawn Potash, who happens to be my wife. Several of today's legislative candidates contacted us beforehand to let us know that they would be unable to attend because of other commitments, including Harry Lennon of Cairo and Louis Armstrong of Durham. Both had other events. And then Bill Lawrence wasn't going to be able to make it, but Bill made it. And thank you so much for coming out. There'll be a file of today's, in addition to this event streaming live over the internet, there'll be a file of today's event that will be scheduled into daily programming at WGXC.org starting tomorrow, and it'll be run on a daily basis up until the Monday just before the election. Without any further ado, Fawn Potash.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the candidates, and thank you for stepping up to serve your communities. Thank you, voters, for coming here to educate yourselves on the important issues in our community. My name is Fawn Potash. I'm representing the League of Women Voters, and the purpose of the League is to educate voters and also to inspire participation in government and civic life. First thing I want to mention is cell phones should be off. The rules for today's event. Maybe you've already met Galen Joseph Hunter, if you wave your hand, and Judy O'Grady. These ladies have cards and pencils. One question per card. Those will be read to the candidates. They'll have 1 minute to respond. No statements, no personal remarks, only questions for the candidates. Please make them legible. The candidates will have 2 minutes for opening statements and 2 minutes for closing statements. If you have additional remarks, if you didn't have time in your 1 minute response to a question, please take notes and you can include those in your closing remarks. What else?
Microphones.
Microphones. We are sharing microphones.
I'm talking
to them. Oh, talk into your microphones. We'll have a timer. The timer has says 30 seconds. That means your time is almost up. And one says stop, and that means you actually have to stop talking. So, let me introduce the panelists. Bill Lawrence.
Yes.
Sean Frey.
Yes.
All these candidates are for county legislature. Kevin Lewis.
Yes.
Jim Mulligan. Chris Feaster. Robin DePew. Joe Izzo. And Forrest Cotton. Welcome, everyone. Yeah. Joan, can you time until Nancy gets here? I'd also like to say that this sublime setting we're in today is a memorial exhibit by Rudy Burkout. All right, just blanked on his last name. And this exhibit, we're really privileged to have this work here, is likely to travel all over the world, so we're lucky to have it here first. Opening comments, the order of opening comments is determined by straws. We'll start with... I also want to thank... Andrea and Jim Cunliffe of Union Mills for hosting this event. Okay, opening order. We're starting with Bill Lawrence.
Introduction of myself.
You have 2 minutes for opening comments. If you'll sit down and speak into your microphone.
My name is Bill Lawrence. I'm from the town of Cairo. I live there with my wife, Peg. We have a son in Brooklyn. He's a funeral director. I don't like the way he looks at me sometimes. My daughter is a housewife in Cairo. Her husband is a corrections officer. I'm a retired teacher from the Cairo-Durham Central School District. I taught science for 35 years. I was first elected as a legislator from Cairo in 1980, and with an absence of 5 years after I became supervisor for the town of Cairo, I came back to this legislative body in 1993. I enjoy being a legislator. I find it a very exciting and informational job. I think public service is a high ideal for anybody to reach, and I encourage anybody who has not tried it to try it. I believe that, of all my philosophies, I believe the human factor is the most important. I think people are more important than buildings, roads, and equipment. I also believe in justice for all, although many times it has to be justice for one. In order for the entire populace to be served, one person has to be served justice one at a time so that everybody's served in the end. And that's my philosophy. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Sean Frey.
Sean Frey.
Frey.
Frey. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sean Frey. I'm in the town of Durham. I was elected 3 years ago for the first time after being never been involved in government in any way, shape, form, or fashion whatsoever. Over the last 3 years, I've spent a lot of my time on three major areas, is reducing taxes and the attempt to reduce taxes, spending, and to try to increase some jobs here in Greene County. I've lived here in Greene County since 91. I'm a 10-year Navy vet, 3 years Army vet. I spent 8 years in corrections, 5 years as a local police officer in the town of Carroll. So most of my life since I arrived here back in the country when I was 17 from Ireland was spent in public service, whether it be with the military or local law enforcement or corrections, state law enforcement. I spent the last 5 years up until this past year down in New Jersey working for a construction management company, overseeing sites anywhere from 3,000 square feet to 140,000 square feet. So I've got some background in construction. I currently work for Ulster Green ARC as the Director of Facility and Plant Operations, which we oversee roughly 50 sites throughout the two counties of Ulster and Green. I live in Durham with my wife. I have 4 children, and I got 5 grandchildren. 2 will be going to the Care of Durham School District for the first time this coming year. So we're looking forward to that. And again, like Bill says, it is an honor to represent, and I enjoy it. I truly believe to be a representative, especially at the county level, it isn't a part-time job, but it's a full-time job, and you have to give it 24/7. Those who know me know that's exactly how I live and deal with this job. I think it's important that we put that, 24/7. It's not just a part-time position. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Lewis from Greenville. I live in Greenville my whole life. I live with my wife, Rosemary. I have 2 young boys. Sorry. Tucker and Russell. Tucker's 15-year-old Boy Scout. Both of them are in scouting. I myself am also an assistant scoutmaster in Greenville. I'm current town supervisor. I served on the board for 3 terms prior to that, so I have 14 years in service of the community. We operate 2 family-owned businesses in Greenville. One is a resort, Bauman's Brookside. The other is Bauman Septic Cleaning on the county level. I've worked in a project manager for a construction company for 4 years prior to that, out of town. Really wanted to be back in Greene County, not Maine, Florida, wherever we happen to be. I enjoy living in Greenville. I enjoy giving back to the community that provided me with many opportunities while growing up. And my hope is to be able to provide that for the youth of our county and the town and provide them a place where they want to come back to, not have to pack up and move out, get an education, and come back and provide to their community. I also coached JV soccer at the Greenville Central School for 3 years. I did the modified program before that. So as Sean says, you give back to your community. I give back quite a bit. I seem to spend more time at community activities than I do at home. Fortunately, both of my boys are very active, so they keep me busy. I think it's important that we give back to the community. Our community's our youth program, we have a great youth program. I'm running out of time. I also have a foreign exchange student this year that I wanted to share our culture with, and he's had a great time, and we'll keep him until after Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
I think I'll forego the etiology. Most people know who I am. I was born in New York, raised a family here in Greenville, lived here for 40 years, have run a number of businesses in Greenville, including a construction company and presently Shed Depot. Many people have asked me why I'm running for county legislator. I'm running because I believe that I would bring thoughtful, energetic, and honest representation for the residents of Greenville. I'm committed to bringing open debate and independent thinking to the office of county legislator. My goal is to utilize my experience in both finance, administration, and business to obtain all the services, funding, and consideration that the people want and deserve. Without a doubt, higher and higher taxes are most people's number one concern. We need to get a rein on our county costs so that we can keep local tax increases to the barest minimum while being constantly vigilant for ways to decrease them, which is really an important item on my agenda. In Greenville, we found that far too much of our tax dollars is shouldered by the residential taxpayer. Higher and higher taxes are most people's number one concerns. We need to get a rein on our county costs so that we can keep local tax increases to the barest minimum while being constantly vigilant for ways to decrease them. Now, that sounds like I repeated myself. Anyway. They're complex problems in search of solutions, and I would hope that people would consider voting for me. I will bring energy, intelligence, and will to the office of county legislator for Greenville. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
I was faced with a very difficult decision after 8 years on the Village of Athens board. And to help me make that decision, I decided to take a little trip across the river to Olana and walk down the trails there and sit on the hillside for a while and look over at Greene County. As I have so many times before, I saw such a beautiful landscape over here. It was just as incredible as always, and it's led me to a decision to embark on this campaign for county legislator. I looked out there, and I saw the small towns, and I saw the villages, and I knew that I had an obligation to do what I could do to try to improve the quality of life in this community and to enter into a process to bring economic development into this area, which would protect that environment that we treasured so much. I also looked out there and I saw small towns that needed to be revitalized and to have a new burst of energy and some new faith in their existence. And as part of the next step of the process, I began going to the county legislature meetings. And I found some very dedicated people there who were very interested in trying to bring us into the 20th century and to do the right thing for their constituents. What I also saw was a lack of discussion and debate and independent thinking and an absence of creativity that is really necessary if we're going to reach the goals that we've established in the comprehensive plan for our economic development in this county. So the decision was made for me after going to these two places, and I look forward to serving in the legislature if elected. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the League for this forum, for their continuing effort to educate the public on election issues through these forums. I have served in government for 25 years. Village, county, town. And it's always been a challenge to meet the issues that are currently in our economic economy. And I have the maturity, the experience, and the willingness to listen. I also am afraid of the financial instability of New York State government and of the federal government, and the fact that most of these issues are going to come down upon the counties and the towns and the villages of Greene County. You have to be at the table in order to solve the problems. I would like to take a look at sales tax, EMS, our public health service, our senior care service, because all those issues are going to impact us in the next 3 years. And I believe in my heart that I will serve the town of Catskill, my main concern, the town of Catskill, as a county legislator, and bring forth to Greene County a new era in government. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Forrest Cotton.
Good afternoon. I want to thank also the League for hosting this, as well as for Andrea and Jim Cunliffe for being our hosts here today, and GXC for broadcasting on and our moderators, Fawn and Paul Smart. My name is Forrest Cotton. I'm a county legislator now here in Greene County in Catskill. I'm in my first term. Prior to this, I served as a village trustee for two terms, serving 1 year as president. I'm a resident now 13 years. I got involved in village politics because I saw in the village about that time that things weren't quite going where I thought they should. And I didn't want to wait around 25 years till I became an old-timer so that I could get involved. I chose to get involved then. And we joined a bipartisan team. We got a lot done at the village level. I took that experience and ran 3 years ago for county legislator and got on the county legislature. When arriving there, Chris Feaster just outlined a few things. He's absolutely right. There was a lack, and still is, a lack of transparency and open government at the county level. There are some things, as mentioned just by Joe, which are out of our control, federal government, state government budgets, but we have a county government, and our county government budget is under our control, and it's out of control. So we have a deficit which is looming, and we need to take care of that. Accountability and transparency are still problems that need to be addressed. If I'm reelected, I will continue my efforts on pushing for open government, accountability, and responsible spending, and I will continue to keep control of our county taxes as best I can. I look forward to having your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin DePew.
Yes, my name is Robin DePew. I'm from Palenville, New York. I was born and raised there. I am educated. I have a BA from SUNY New Paltz, and I attended Vermont Law School. Graduated in the class of 1984 and came back to Greene County to practice law and have done so ever since. I am an avid equestrian. My part-time hobbies include carriage collecting and driving, and I spend a great deal of time in that field and in the neighboring communities and the neighboring states. This is my second run for a legislative seat. Both pursuits being brought about by problems, one of which I felt was agency dysfunction that the legislature might not have been addressing within our government, particularly the Department of Social Services. I was concerned about some incidents that had occurred there and felt that I needed to become involved in government in order to effectuate a change. And the second area that really concerns me is the commercial development and the commercial avenues that we are focused on, both in Catskill, mainly in Catskill for myself, but within the whole county as a whole. I'm concerned about the way that the 9W corridor is going to look in Catskill and what the feel of it is, and preserving the aspect of a small town community. I'd like to retain our small town community life as best we can with the growth that we're confronted with.
Thank you very much. That concludes the opening remarks, and we'll begin the questions. And what we'll do is we'll go in strict order, starting with Forrest with this question, and then we'll go backwards with the next question. And so this question is for each candidate. Who is your political role model?
That's a good question. I haven't followed any specific role model when it comes to politics. I'll give you my answer locally. Jack Sensabaugh was my best role model here in the village in town of Catskill. Jack was our chairman, and Jack ran for the village, maybe even have served back when Joe was on it many, many years ago in the 80s. And what Jack taught me was to always keep listening, spend the time making sure that you've heard people's concerns, never, never be quick to judge, and always smile, and taught me the virtues of what it means to be a candidate, and remind you that you're there to serve the people. Whatever you do every day, your job is there to serve the people. No matter how political it may get, or budget and finance may come up, and all the other things that seem very lofty and weighty, at the end of the day, it's how to serve the people you represent. So I would say Jack is my best role model.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
Life is my political role model. My life. Over the years, as you gain experience through marriage and children and through your neighbors, you find out those things that are lacking in government. Those issues that you need to address as a human being. And I always look to my Catholic education and to my experiences as I would want to treat somebody as my legislative role model. If I had to pick a political person, it would be Thomas Paine. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
Well, I love Thomas Paine because I am the Common Sense Party, and I do believe in the rights of man. Thank you for that. But locally, I would, and listening to, there are so many political role models that I could choose from. I apologize for that. Thomas Jefferson, of course, would be high on my list. But locally, it would be Frank Stabile. And Frank Stabile is from Palenville. And he was a wonderful legislator. And I called him up many a time and reamed him out a little bit. But he got things done. It would be amazing. You'd make a phone call to Frank, and the next thing you know, they would be investigating it, and he'd call you back. So as far as county level goes, I would say Frank Stabile.
Thank you. Chris Feaster?
Well, I had several role models that I've come to admire over the years, some of them begrudgingly even, but I've gotten there. One of them is the current town supervisor, Mr. Albert Salvino, who has been campaigning with me over the past few weeks. And despite all the time that he's put in over the years, he still had time for me once again. But as I went around and I noticed him interacting with people, it was just amazing. After all these years, he can turn the smile on, he can get other people to smile in a matter of seconds. My other local role model was Mayor Dave Riley, who I served with for the first 6 years of my time in office. And Dave had a wonderful ability to bring people together and to kind of gloss over our differences and get things done. We got a lot of big projects done in Athens. We got the water improvement project done, the firehouse done, renovation of the community center. And Dave Riley was very much instrumental in doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
Boy, that's quite a question. I thought about Aristotle, Plato, Cato. But you know who I finally, and nobody's ever asked me this question, but I came to a conclusion. The best example of an absolutely, completely astute politician who got things more than done was LBJ. The guy was the master of the Senate. He was the master of everything he tackled. He knew people. He knew their weaknesses. He knew their strengths. He knew how to cajole them. He knew how to persuade them. And if he had to, he knew how to twist their arm so that he could get the things that he thought America needed. And he did some great things, the Civil Rights Act, the Food Stamp Act. I'm just I'm trying to rattle them off here, but LBJ, as much as he kind of really messed up with the Vietnam War, but that he did that because ill-advised by advisors, I still think he was one of the most astute politicians ever in America.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Thank you, Jim. One our local level, I think, would be Andrew Macko was one of our county legislators, provided a lot for Greenville. Infrastructure-wise, he was forethought to put in our water district. And at a time when most towns didn't have a water district, Greenville went ahead and did that. He was forward-thinking. He served as our supervisor for a long period of time. Then he came down and served in the county legislator. And he provided a lot for our town, which I think is great. Another one of my ambitions would be my mother. She told me to listen to others and put others before myself, and I think that's been a great code to live by, even as a politician. She was not a political woman, but she had a great forethought. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
Boy, that's a real hard question. If anybody knows me, when it comes to politics, I truly believe that in a small county like Greene County, where we're not even big enough to have a population of a city, our biggest town is Catskill, Coxsackie, so forth, that I really truly believe in a small county like this, politics, I'm not a politician, as well proven as some of the statements have come clear in the last several weeks in regards to how I do things on the legislature. So I find it very, very difficult to answer that question, because I believe that when you put in the title of Democrat, Republican, Independence, whatever you might put on, we're too small to have that. But at the same token, I mean, I've worked with several politicians at the state level that I've had great time and admiration for. John Fassa was one. In corrections, when I was on the local union as the secretary of the local union Department of Corrections up in Coxsackie, anytime I needed help, John Fassa was there for me. So at local, absolutely. I look at Jerry Cunningham over in the town board in the town of Durham, and he's just a very quiet man, just sits back, but thinks and looks.
I was told to stop.
You're allowed to finish your sentence.
So on the local level in my own town, I'd look at Jerry Cunningham, a lifelong farmer who's brought an awful lot to the town board in the last couple of years that he's been there. Tremendous, you've got the rest in Jody Woods, my town board. I put my town board up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bill Lawrence.
At the local level, I think one of my first important mentors was Joe Leggio Sr. When I came to the legislature in 1980, he took me under his wing. He was the most astute local politician I've ever met. He taught me a valuable lesson to share the information and the ways of doing things with anybody that asked, and I do that to this day, Democrat or Republican or anybody else. At the state level, I think Charlie Cook was my role model for being a legislator. He's one that was unbiased, he was effective, he was quiet, and he was listening. He was able to listen without being able to overpower a conversation. And I try to follow that model in my way of dealing with people in my district and in this county. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start with Bill Lawrence and work our way back. What are the key issues for the legislature?
The legislature faces a lot of key issues. The number one issue is probably the economy, trying to deal with a budget that is becoming very tight, very hard to balance. The state cutting back on money that it had promised us, revenues that we were expecting. The federal government's in the same boat. People that are paying higher and higher taxes. I think we have to improve our tax base, and the tax base where people are paying their fair share of what services they expect to get from their county government. I think we need to look at the towns and villages. They're having problems with purchasing and balancing their budgets. I think sharing services with them, sharing bidding procedures with them would be an important aspect of the next term. And I think our youth, I think the teenage population in this county is greatly underserved, and that we need something for them to do besides hang on the streets on weekends and after school. And I think we have to have a joint group with the school districts to deal with that ever-growing problem.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
I too would mention the same things, the economy, the state of the economy, not just at the federal level, but the state level, and especially in our county. With sales tax being down right now at about $2.5 million, it really worries me that we're gonna have a major shortfall at the end of this year with a projection of about $3.22 million. On top of that, you've got tax revenue streams that have been depleted from, I know I'm going to get nailed afterwards on this one, but on property taxes, shortfalls in property taxes of $2 million. With the state cutting back on its funding in several areas. It's also a concern. So at the end of the year, try to balance the budget. It's one of my biggest concerns, trying to balance that budget and coming up so that we don't increase taxes. I said very clearly, keep the taxes down, keep the spending down, look at ways of cutting the spending altogether and trying to come in with a flatline budget, but also try to strive to bring in the jobs. So that's where I stand.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
I can't disagree with either one of those guys. A balanced budget is one of the key important things. There's a couple other things. EMS services in Greene County and all the volunteer organizations are suffering for lack of volunteers. We have to find a way to help these organizations attract more volunteers so they're there to provide us when we need them in a time of need. Youth activities. Being in the scouting program, our scouting seems to be picking up. Kids need something to do because parents aren't vacationing, so they're looking at other options. They're coming back to programs that provide them interesting things to do, study of government. We got to keep our young citizens informed, keep them an idea of what's happening, get them involved early so that they can participate and help us in our future.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
Boy, that's a tall order. I could give me 5 minutes. You'd have to shut me up. Three things: taxes, taxes, and taxes. I've spent some time watching the legislature work, and I think that one of the things that we need to do is to develop a much better acumen as it relates to accounting, finance, and economics. We're in a shortfall now in terms of our sales tax, and I don't mean to be critical, but it just seems to me that the legislators themselves should be able to look at a situation like we had in this economy a year ago and said, whoa, that expectation of sales tax around $28 million is going to hit a big-time shortfall. It doesn't require a lot of expertise, but what it does require is an ability to communicate with each other and admit we're in trouble. So let's do something about it.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, it's certainly obvious, as everybody has stated so far, that the current budgetary situation is the most important issue facing the legislature. But even more important is probably setting a process in place so that we don't get into these situations in the future. And certainly, as I go around the town of Athens, the heavy burden of taxation is on everybody's mind, especially on the seniors in that population. They face enormous difficulties in staying at home. And so senior services is something that's going to have to be faced even more than has been in the past. And we do some good things, but I think we're going to have an even larger burden to face in the future. And the economic development issue also goes over to jobs, because there's an awful lot of people in this county are not participating in whatever prosperity is here. The jobs that we have been bringing into this county are largely warehousing and light manufacturing jobs. We need more. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
At the risk of being redundant, money and taxation, that seems to be key on all of the people that I interview as I go about my campaigning. Secondly, I would like to see a full-time county administrator appointed. We've been working with an interim county, part-time county, or I guess he's full-time, but he's not a on the salary. He's a $550 per diem county administrator. There's also some agency dysfunction that I feel has continued, and some people spoke to me about that yesterday after yesterday's session, that I hadn't addressed that issue or had kind of minimized that, that I think needs to be addressed. And also, I'd like some explanations regarding some of the activities that have occurred within the Industrial Development Agency and some of the numbers that are coming out through the State Comptroller's Office.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
It appears everybody likes to talk about taxes and lowering taxes. But the issue is not lowering taxes. The issue is the growth of public and social responsibility. That's what drives budgets. That's what drives the cost of government. And as the federal government and as the state government starts to cut programs that affect our health care and affect our social services and our senior care and our infrastructure and our sewers and roads, the object and the scope is to balance what you need to do with what you have. And that's the greatest challenge that the county is facing.
Thank you. Forrest Cotton.
Yeah, a tough going last. Everything's been said already. So everyone is on mark with that. Youth services, volunteer services. What it comes down to is the budget. If the budget has a deficit right now, we know that, and that means that there's either going to have to be a tax increase, a revenue increase, another way, or a budget cut. It's as simple as that. To answer what Joe just said, so there are some things that can be. Senior transportation, we could be smarter about and planning senior transportation because there are alternate services crossing areas. So there are ways we can be smarter with the money we already spend without actually cutting services. But in addition to that, we can also make cuts where we haven't yet. There's a lot of things that can be done. A lot of things have been done. There has been progress in the last few years, and some of it has been external pressures from the federal and state government, but a lot of it is right here in the county, including a continuing deficit that has been there for at least 8 years.
Thank you. The next question, we'll start with Forrest and work our way back that way. How will you balance economic development and protection of our natural resources?
Green County itself doesn't actually have any recycling program in the facilities. There's no process for that. We have passed an incentive to add solar energy for houses. They'll get a tax benefit. I believe there is also energy credits from the federal and state government for wind. It's often difficult for a county of our size to do too much more. It takes more of a state or federal level to do that. Economic development can easily be coordinated with environmental concerns. We right now have an Empire Zone here in Catskill, has never yet begun its development, so we're starting from scratch. It's a perfect time to coordinate the impact on the environment. We ought to think about areas that have a sprawl. We don't have that quite here yet, but before we get there, let's not create one level sprawl and just keep going out. Let's think logically. Let's follow our plans, as Chris Feaster mentioned before, our comprehensive plans. By doing that, we can actually balance the two.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
There's a fine line between economic development and environmental resources, and it's interesting that Greene County has one of the most diversified environmental issues in the whole Hudson Valley. You have the state park, you have the river, you have various environmentally conservation areas. So environmentally and economically, we need to be smart. We need to look at businesses that provide for good jobs, but also protect the environment. And sometimes it's very difficult to do that. And I think some people are going to have to understand that either you live or you die on making very, very, very tough issues. Thank you.
Thank
Decisions
you.
On tough issues.
Robin DePue.
The first thing that I would like to point out is that in order to protect the environmental aspect from economic development, you have to target and identify what is environmentally significant and what do we want to protect. and a lot of times they happen to be swamps or whatever, but once we know what those areas are, we say that that's never going to be subject to development. That piece of property is so precious, that's so important, that it's never going to be part of economic development. And then you take it from there on a case-by-case basis. We're playing a what-if game. Any other way of looking at it, you know, you have to have a specific project in mind and where you want it and how is it going to fit in. I don't think you can do it in a vague, abstract way. It's just not a way that I could approach that.
Thank you. Chris Feaster. This question was originally addressed to you personally, but I thought it was important that everyone answer it.
Okay. Sorry, guys. We've come a long way in 10 years. 10 years ago, we were ready to accept just any sort of development that came down the road in Greene County. And today, we're in a different atmosphere. We insist that people that are going to build in Greene County respect the environment, respect the natural resources here. And the IDA, although I have differences with them, has been a leader in that area. You know, they have worked up at the industrial parks to set aside much land and put it into the Green Land Trust. Another area that really kind of turned the corner was the Athens Gen plant, which many of us were opposed when it was being built. But through the pressures that were extended onto this project by the community, a whole series of environmental safeguards were put into that project, and the project is much more acceptable at the end of that process than it was in the beginning.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
Boy, that's a tough question. We're getting beat to death in natural resources everywhere in life. The biggest thing I think we need to preserve in this county, I know it's going to sound a little weird, but water. Most people don't realize what an incredible resource water is, and how really badly it's being threatened in so many different areas and ways. So my concept of balancing natural resources, I agree with Chris. I think the IDA has done a good job of setting aside enough land in their development systems so that there's plenty of open spaces. But my thing is that I think we need to develop real small patches of IT-intensive little parks out in the backwoods of Greenville, because Greenville doesn't have much else, where we can bring in high-tech internet capabilities so that we can attract technology companies that will give us good employment and will be light on the land.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Oh, sorry. That's right. I don't disagree with Jim, with infrastructure is important. We also need to keep our rural character by promoting agricultural development. Greene County was a farming community. We watch every day as you drive around, they're closing down, giving up farming. They're picking up little niches, whether they're apple farms or going back into milking cows. They're making smaller and smaller, providing small jobs, but it's a start. We also need to promote tourism and small local business by better advertising our county's resources. We have thousands of people come here all summer long from places outside of town, metropolitan New York, looking for a place to relax, enjoy. They've been coming here for 100 years. That's another industry that's been slowly eroding. We've got to try and promote that. If we can promote that with better advertising, reach out to these people, let them know we're here, get them here, and they'll want to stay.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
So, several different issues. Solar energy was brought up earlier. We're one of the few counties in New York that actually still has sales tax on the product itself that you put on your roof, the extra panels. What we should do is try to come up with a sales tax exemption for that. I know in the economic time where we're trying to cut, increase sales tax, this is maybe not, in some people's mind may not be the right way to do it, but if we encourage it, to bring that green product in here, bring wind power. We've got a tremendous amount of wind power that's going on throughout the county, especially in Greene County, over in Greenville. You've got two companies in that area. Burn ban. We should have got 100% out against that burn ban, in my opinion. We're a rural area. That burn ban, you're talking about, it's saving the environment. We're going to increase our landfills, not just in this state, but outside. So I disagreed with that, you know, in letting the state get away with implementing a burn ban. But the biggest thing over we got going over in Durham is the agro-tourism board that we've got implemented over the last several months, coming together and recognizing that we are a farming community. We have many, many different types of farms that can produce many different types of product, and to really boost them up.
Thank you. Bill Lawrence.
I think more than ever before, the balance between economic development and the environment is being achieved. I think at our own level, the our Director of Planning and Economic Development, Warren Hart, and the IDA Executive Director, Sandy Mathis, are under very strict regulations by the state to mitigate wetlands and make sure that the appearance, the visual impact is mitigated. I think the local level is where the key elements of this balance must be achieved. The local planning boards at the village and town levels are the most important aspect of making sure that your comprehensive plan, your vision of where you want your town to be, is met. And if you're dealing with those local levels and you're dealing with that planning board at those local levels, you're going to find that you have the greatest impact to change it the way you want to see it.
Thank you. The next question will start with Bill Lawrence. What can you do to create jobs locally?
Sorry, would you repeat that?
What can you do to create jobs locally?
To create jobs locally, you have to have some sort of incentive for companies to come in and participate at your county level or at your town level to build and to produce a product or to give a service that people are going to purchase. We do that at the county level by using the IDA for the most part. The big warehouses you see on 9W are part of that plan. On the smaller issues, we try to help small business people, which is the backbone of this county and of this country. If you're going to have a growth in jobs, you're going to need a growth in the small business person. We have microenterprise loans, we have quantum loans, which the county gives away. It doesn't give away. They lend out money at a very low interest rate. That money is used based on job creation, one job for every $20,000 loan to them. I think at this level, at the size of our county, that is our best effort at this point.
Sean Fry.
Well, this is a topic that I've been discussing for the last several months, if not the last year and a half, with our local state assemblyman, our senator, the IDA. It's in regard to Stifas. Stifas, in my backyard in Durham, is one of the major employers. Stifas just got bought out by Glasgow Klein & Smith, a British-based company, London-based company. And one of the ideas that we're trying to bring together and put to the table and trying to get everybody together and sit down with Glasgow Klein & Smith once they sign the contract is to see what we can do to marry them up with another company. They have the infrastructure on that property of water and sewer and the good water treatment plant that could sustain another company upside it. Stifas creates a product. Right now it's pharmaceutical, it's a dermatological product. They're talking about possibility bringing in a company that a part of the Glasgow Klein & Smith is toothpaste. So by bringing in a company that sisters up and marries up with them and building another plant alongside them to produce the raw product so that they can just drive it across the parking lot and create the main product, we in turn increase our job force over in Durham, and we can help reduce the taxes by bringing another tax base to Greene County and to Durham. That's one of the things I'd look at.
Kevin Lewis.
I believe that the state, county, and local level must work hard and hand in hand to welcome business into the state. Each one of them, it seems to be off on a tangent. We need to attract any business we can, Greene County especially. Small business should be promoted by home occupations. We have a lot of home occupations starting up. Typically has led into bigger small businesses in Greene County. But this also goes back to Mr. Mulligan. You need to improve our technology infrastructure so that people can work from their home. They can't be out stuck in the woods and not be able to communicate. I think that would
Thank
be a
you.
Start.
Jim Mulligan.
Now you're talking my topic. We spend, at least in Greenville, we spend $28 million to educate our kids and what happens to them. As fast as they can, they're out of here, and most of them never come back with all the knowledge that they gain and all the expertise that they gain. What I'd like to see happen in Greenville, because we're a small rural community up, as Alex Betke once called it, in the boonies, we We need to create an IT system that will make Greenville attractive. We need to improve our cell service so the kids that we educate will at least consider staying here because they'll be able to text their friends on a regular basis. But they'll also be able to get into tech businesses that pay well, living wage jobs. That's how we get people here. We have to take advantage of their education, and we have to provide the infrastructure that they need to live a happier, longer, and better life.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, I think the IDA has certainly made some very important efforts towards improving the job situation in this county. It's disappointing that they aren't able to attract more high-tech industries and industries that have better pay scales than we face today. I think, as some people have already alluded to, that small is often better. And I would love to see more emphasis on supporting the small businesses that are already here and providing additional training so that these local enterprises can succeed and stay in Green County. As Jim said, it's a shame that our young people can't find the jobs they need when they come back from their education and look for a reason to stay in Greene County. So I would also like to say that the Stiefel Labs situation scares me very much, and I hope that the legislature and the IDA can work with that those people to ensure that Stiefel Labs stays in Greene County for a long time. They've been a great neighbor and an employer. Thank you.
Robin DePue.
Unfortunately, I think that locally we're somewhat hampered by the regulations that exist in the state of New York. It's not real friendly to a small local business community, the state regulations that we have. That being said, I've been in business for myself for 25 years, and it's tough. You need a work ethic. You need to work more than maybe a 9-to-5 job. That being said, I think that to minimize regulation as much as you can within the community, and to the other thing is historically growth is going to happen, and I don't think you're going to stop it. We have location. Growth may slow down. It may grow faster, but I don't think that it'll ever stop, and I don't think it's something that we have to worry about. I think in the long term, growth will always occur.
Joe Izzo.
First thing we need to do is to tell government to stay out of our pockets. You have workman compensation costs. You have state fees. You have filing fees. You have inspection fees, reporting fees. You have to get new license plates for your car. I mean, a trucking business is going to cost them over $12 million to change all their license plates because somebody wants more money. The fact of the matter is that we may be fortunate that we have a bedroom community and that our individuals are allowed to go to other areas to work. I think if we attract more moderate housing, make it attractive for young couples to come in here, enhance our school system, economic growth will continue for local businesses because those individuals will buy locally. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Forrest Cotton.
Thank you. As a member of the Local Development Corporation and also as Bill mentioned before, our Quantum Fund, loans are given out to small businesses across the county and here in Catskill. Each of those have job creation requirements tied to them and have been successful. In addition to that, the IDA has been very successful in providing incentives to those larger employers. As village president, I was part of the team that welcomed and signed the deal when Walmart and Lowe's came in, creating 300 jobs or more. What the LDC IDA and the Quantum Fund can also do is provide training for new businesses. It's important for them to communicate with them, understand what they need so that that can be offered up front. Not everyone who starts a home business, as mentioned before, or a new business knows how to do it. They may need some help. That kind of training can be useful. Also mentioned before was education. Education is key because without that, you won't have the workforce to be here to take those jobs if they're high skilled jobs. Last also mentioned was inspections. I actually had a recent example where state inspection was being done and a local inspection was being done in fire code. So we ought to eliminate duplicative processes. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start in the middle.
Oh, all right.
What can the legislature do to support and improve our schools? We'll start with Kevin Lewis.
That's a good one. I guess the question would be to get the children educated in a job that would help serve our county and our community. IT jobs, anything, even starting small business. I don't know how much they promote small business in the school at this time, but to get these kids the idea, the resource of how to operate, how to run a business, what it's going to take to get a capital, get it open, look for the education, use some of the services that are available by the county to come in and advise some of these students whether they're going to go on as a career to college or they're going to start a small business, have the county programs go in, meet the schools, show them what's available, show them what we have to offer, and hope they come back and promote our county and start a small business and get rolling.
Jim Mulligan.
All right. That's a tough one. I think our present school system is on the right approach of how to use the educational system to promote economic development. Presently, Greenville's school system has entered into a partnership with RPI and a couple of other tech firms in terms of not only providing the kinds of equipment that kids would need to get better at what they're doing, but to also create, and the IDA was part of this as well, to create hubs of Wi-Fi and other kinds of IT infrastructure so that the schools would be the first ones with hands-on of those kinds of tools, but to also reach out to schools like RPI and the tech industries in Albany and Rensselaer so that the kids, when they do learn how to use what they're learning to use, they have a place to go and use it.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, I think one of the ways that we can affect the education of our youth in this county is by relieving some of the tax burdens that are faced by the school districts and the people that reside in them in Greene County. And I've been a longtime advocate of doing a study on the sharing of sales tax with the communities here in Greene County. This county is one of only a handful of counties in New York State that does not share sales tax, and many other counties use sales tax to relieve some of the burdens of the cost of higher education. In addition, of course, the legislature is responsible for part of the budget of Columbia Green College, and that college has developed quite a bit over the years. We need to continue to make sure that it provides the needs for our youth and provides the type of training that businesses are looking for when they come into this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
First, I'd like to note that there's a great disparity in the performance among the school districts within this county. There are school districts that are performing on a scale of 7 out of 10, and school districts that are performing at a 3 out of 10. So that should be noted, that all school districts are not created equal within this county. What could we do to improve as legislators? In Kingston, in Ulster County, the legislators sent every school district sent a liaison to the inauguration last year. All the school districts in Ulster County were able to send a busload of kids from their school down to the inauguration, not just because it was Obama. They do that every inauguration. As far as I know, there wasn't a school district in Greene County that did that, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Another thing, we don't keep in touch as far as opportunities that exist for some of the kids. There was an Olympic the Olympic regional finals were held down in Sorgates in 2007 for the region. We didn't tap into that. We didn't take the kids down there. We didn't arrange for it. These kids, it was the Northeast regional finals for the Olympic team, were held in Sorgates, 8 miles down the road. Why weren't our kids there?
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
County government should stay out of the education process. We're having enough problems trying to solve local, social, and other problems. I'm not sure why we want to be in the education system. The fact of the matter is we have, education law, we have state law, we have so many cross jurisdictions that it would be counterproductive for the county government to even think about trying to get involved with education. The only issues that I can think we could do is in the community college and offer more pre-college education classes for high school students. Government has a role, education has a role, and a lot of times we shouldn't be mixing the two. Thank you.
Forrest Cotton.
Yeah, Joe's correct. The school district has its own government, but there are ways we can partner, and we do so now. We provide mental health services in the schools, and something we actually passed the past year, and I was very strongly in support of that. We can also do technological advancements. We can work with them on those. We can also do shared services. We can allow the school districts to purchase through our gas system, which we do with villages and towns right now. We could also create a joint purchasing program countywide, school districts, towns, villages, etc. We could also improve our communication to our residents, letting them know that the college has a chargeback system, so if you don't go to Columbia Green Community College, then it costs you more as a tax. So that's part of our town budget and as well as our county budget. And I also agree with Joe, pre-college courses are a very good way to have them get a head start.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
One of the things that I've asked over the last year as a member of the legislature is that we do a study on autism and the needs that we have, like we're doing a transportation. There's two things I've been asking for and we're in the middle of. It was a transportation assessment, assessing what we have versus what we need, and then trying to integrate them both together. And this is very, very important because in 2 years' time, in 2003, 2013, the state of New York is talking about cutting back on the reimbursements as far as travel for outside agencies. We currently right now ship our children up to the likes of Troy, Schenectady, Albany, Ulster County, and surrounding areas to receive day treatment than when they're dealing with autism. One of the things I would like to see happen is do a full study on what we need to do and try to create our own autistic center here in Greene County. So that the burden up, so it's not put on the burden. So the transportation is a huge, huge part of what we got going on here in Greene County for our schools. That's for the biggest part of our budget in a lot of ways. So if we were to create our own center here, it would reduce the outside transportation drastically. Therefore, we would help to try to reduce their budget in some ways. So that was one of the things I'd like to see happen. But going back to the public transportation system, that too may take off some of the burden off the taxpayers of the school district.
Thank you. Bill Lawrence.
As a teacher for 35 years, now retired, I think you're very fortunate in Greene County to have some very great schools, some very good students, some very wonderful faculty. You have to stop passing the buck about the education of your children to government. It's got to be done by parents. You've got to get to schools. You've got to participate in your child's life. You've got to follow up with what your homework is. You've got to contact your teachers. You've got to go and run for the school board, the most thankless job in the world. And you've got to stop thinking that somebody else is going to solve that problem. Your kids are too important to leave it to politicians, let me tell you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start also in the middle. Jim Mulligan, what is happening with the county jail? Where do you stand on the county jail issue?
Well, that's going to be a go around for probably quite a while, especially since our state has wound up in such a credit crunch. So my doubt is that they will be enforcing much of what they have been asking for the last probably 10 years. I think that the county jail presently, again, if our economy gets any worse, then maybe the amount of crime is going to increase, but it has been in a decrease. So my feeling is that we do not have lots of money right now to be able to improve the county jail. I think we should bring it up to the standards that are expected by the state and by anybody that's in any sense of a human understanding of what it's like to be incarcerated, and then hopefully come up with a plan in 5 years when we have the money to be able to deal with it.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, I don't think there's any possibility in the next few years that this county is going to have the resources to use to build a new county jail. After looking at the experience down in Ulster County, where the cost of the jail ballooned hundredfold over what they were originally projecting, I think that's a lesson that people in this county are probably going to keep at the forefront of their mind for several years. I would suggest that perhaps the best approach is some sort of a regional approach and some sort of use of state facilities as well to relieve the burden that we face on this issue. I don't see any reason why some of the jails, some of the state prisons that may be underpopulated couldn't be used to handle some of the overpopulation in county jails. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
I have the ability to meet with inmates from the county jail on a frequent basis, and I can say that it is routinely related to me that it's in deplorable conditions, and they complain about it all the time, that they like it better when they get sent over to Columbia County or down to Ulster County, because we do house our inmates outside of Greene County when the jail is full. That being said, I don't see that we're going to be in a position financially to do anything about the county jail, a complete overhaul in the near future, and I think we're going to have to continue to muddle along the way that we are currently doing.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
Thank you. We have three correction facilities in the county. I believe that we should at least take a look at the potential of placing our county inmates in one of those institutions, or allowing us to share a portion of that institution. But the interesting part is you need to change state law. State law requires counties to have jails. And it's very difficult when the state government tells counties what to do and doesn't give them the tools to do it. So we're in a catch-22. But I do agree with Mr. Feaster that the Coxsackie facilities should be looked at for a potential use of a county jail.
Thank you. Forrest Cotton.
Yeah, I'll tag right onto that as well. That's something I've offered up before. We need to take advantage of that. We have them right here in our county. They have over statewide under capacity, so we can just move people around and make room for here right here in the county, which actually would technically still comply with the current state law, I would assume. But if it didn't, we could change it. And the Cuomo plan of consolidation can be amended to include that kind of plan where, okay, we have too few people in our state system, but we have a problem here in local counties. Let's work together. Work with the Board of Corrections to do so. I'd say that in our county, we've done a pretty good job of making some improvements. The emergency improvements have been fixed. But a big question is, when we build a building, if it's 100 years old, why didn't we 100 years ago begin to save to fix it? We should do so for everything we do, so we don't come to this question in 2009 and say, oh, now what do we do? Planning ahead, and that hasn't happened.
Thank you. Bill Lawrence.
The jail is a big problem. It's overcrowded. It's antiquated. The situation is not getting any better in Greene County. We have a rising crime rate. We have to look at options, and I think the option of building a new jail is certainly one of those options. The option of using a correctional facility in Greene or Coxsackie is also a possibility. I was part of a task force that started looking at this problem when the Ulster County jail fiasco hit the papers. That killed that idea for a while, because nobody wants to be involved with a building that's going to be overspent by $40 million. But I do think I could care less about the inmates. I don't care what they think about our jail. I think it's more important that our officers and the people who work at the jail facility are kept in the best conditions possible. And I think in the overall scheme of things, we either have to go to build our own or we're going to have to go to a regional approach. If you'd asked me this question 3 years ago, I would have been dead set against building a new jail. But I think now I've changed my mind because of the importance of keeping our criminals in our county.
Sean Fry.
I would go along with what Forrest had mentioned earlier. This is something that should have been told about many, many, many years ago, just like the courthouse. For those who know me, I went against that courthouse from day one. And here we are in 2009 under the current fiscal climate that we're in within the state and the county and taking out a $14 million bond. Right now it's 12 and a half, Mr. Frank would say. And over the course of 20 years, it's going to cost you $24 million. If you add another $50 million because you've got to build a new jail, what price are we going to have to put on the taxpayers? We don't have it. As far as shared services and join up with the state of New York, New York state law clearly says, states very clearly, you cannot mix a state inmate, level inmate, with a county level inmate. So we need to change that law. We also need to go back and we need to, you know, the mandates. This year, New York State turned around and reduced the amount of coverage. We get paid for keeping a state ready inmate here in our custody until he's ready to be released into a state facility. But they've lengthened that time. So they've reduced the amount of money coming back in and lengthened the amount of time that we're required to hold on to them. We should have fought that from day one. So there's multiple of issues that need to be addressed, and they need to have serious attention to them. But as far as, you know, are we able to build a new jail right now? No.
Thank
we can
you,
hardly
Sean.
Afford the buildings we got now.
Sean, thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Thank you. I think I agree with Bill. We probably should have thought about a jail a while ago. We didn't. Now we've got to prepare a long-term plan to replace the jail. We're going to need a county jail at some point down the line. Like Sean said, they will not share services with the state. They're not going to put state inmates in with county inmates, nor are they going to put youth in with adult inmates. You've got to provide both. Rensselaer County did it a number of years ago. I actually worked on building that jail. They also did the same thing at Albany County 10, 15 years ago. So our plan should be to look at a plan, figure out how we're going to afford it, how we can make it happen, and provide our own jail at some point.
Thank you. Next question will begin with Robin DePew. How can we ensure those in power are not abusing that status? Do we need a county ethics watchdog?
Could you repeat that?
How can we ensure that those in power are not abusing that status? Do we need a county ethics watchdog?
Well, we used to have Edith Stockinger. Unfortunately, she died. But, yeah, we do need a county watchdog, and I think that's not something that should come from an agency or you know, a paid position. I think that's what the public is for. We need an informed public, and that is our county watchdog.
Joe Izzo.
I'm a firm believer in open government. And when you open meetings, and when you open discussion, and when you allow the public to attend and listen, that is the ethics and the control of ethics in the county. Open government. Let people know what's going on and allow individuals to say what they want to say in public meetings.
Forrest Cotton.
I agree with both. Open government and transparency are important. Improve the communication and discussion. When the people are aware of what we're voting on, we pass resolutions that don't even have the name of the person we're appointing on the title of the resolution. So when they're read off, nobody but the legislators themselves know what's actually going on in that vote. There's a lot of things that can improve, but one of them also would be the ethics board. We actually have one. I've never seen it. I don't think they're even all appointed. So it would be nice to get that going again. You know, there are a lot of things that can be done, but it does start with public participation and making sure that each person who is aware of what we are doing and how we're doing it, and that also comes because we don't currently have a truly open government process.
Chris Feaster.
Well, I think one of the most valuable watchdogs that we could possibly have is the local press. But in order for the local press to function as they are designed to function, the legislature needs to open itself up. I've been to numerous meetings this summer. I don't think I've missed a one all summer long. There's literally a list of 30 to 40 resolutions that come before the board. They're already laid out. There doesn't seem to be any sort of discussion or debate about them. I'm not sure where this list comes from or how it's materialized, but the press is, if they're going to function, they're going to have to hear some debate and some independent thought and some examples of what people's thinking is on these various issues. In addition, the legislators themselves have to be their own watchdogs. We recently had an issue which I don't say it's the end of the world, but I thought it was rather questionable judgment when a legislator was scheduled to receive a quantum loan that really is designed for the general population and should not have been extended to somebody who is already serving in the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
Openness and transparency. I agree with just about everybody. The public needs to be a watchdog. We need an ethics board. And the biggest thing we need is to open up the county legislature. We need to have transparency. Everybody talks about it. Nobody's done it. What does it take to be able to take the minutes of the county legislature's meetings and have them up on some sort of a website? We have a county website. And at least get it up within the next month. What does it take to have fiduciary reports, basically quarterly fiscal reports as it relates to the expenditures of the county over the quarter? I think that with that kind of openness, then the public participates and we all benefit from it.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Sound a lot like a repeat. They all have good ideas. Each person in office has a responsibility to act responsible and lead as they have been elected to serve. The citizens in each district should be aware of what is happening at the county level. Open discussion of all the matters should be conducted at all meetings so that each person, whether they attend a meeting or get a report back at their town board level of what's going on, they need to know what's happened, and the public and the paper will be the watchdog. And each one of us as a public servant has a responsibility to do that.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
I think this issue has been brought up numerous times throughout many numerous campaigns. Transparency was in one 3 years ago, 6 years ago, 9 years ago. Nothing changes. And the reason nothing changes is because you've got a minority and you've got a majority. And when the majority has the control, and it goes back to the very fundamental things I said earlier, when you have a majority and a minority, and this Democrat-Republican, nothing's really going to change because it's all political. We need to put politics aside. And that's why I've been called pugnacious in the whole nine yards, is because really, you wear a coat that says Democrat, it doesn't bother me. You wear a Republican. The issue here is, like, I'll give you a fundamental issue here the other night. We went through some major issues regarding the mortgage tax. I asked for one simple thing to be given to me from the county administrator. And I'm still waiting for that after several requests. But again, it's because it's an election year and he's fearful that, oh, he's going to give me more information than I should know as a legislator. We need open and transparent government. And we need it not just today, we need it years ago. And that's why we're in the position we are in Greene County, is because you've got a majority and a minority, not one government.
Thank you. Bill Lawrence.
I think abuse of power is something you don't see a lot of in Greene County. Maybe in Washington, D.C., in Greene County, I just don't see a lot of it. I think if you want transparency to be effective, you've got to be looking. A lot of people do not show up at our meetings. They do not show up to committee meetings where the bulk of the work is done. We meet on several nights a month on committee agenda items, which are discussed, just talked about, voted on, sent to the regular legislative meeting at the middle of the month, and then are voted on by the entire group, and usually there's not much discussion then. But you're certainly welcome to come and find out for yourself what we're doing. The papers, I think, do a commendable job in trying to keep track of some very boring issues, and they do make us toe the line when it comes to answering the question why we voted the way we did. And I think you have that same right. Our phone numbers are listed. You can call us anytime you want. You can find out that information personally from me or from any of these other guys that are on the board or who are running. I don't think there's anybody that's trying to hide anything.
Thank you. Next question, we're going to begin with Joe Izzo. In times of budget shortfalls, should county funds be used for youth entertainment and sports, or should families pay for their own activities?
It's a matter of what are your priorities and what do you need to do. If you have senior citizens that need food or Meals on Wheels, or somebody going to a soccer game, obviously you need to make that priority a senior citizen. And so it's not a simple yes or no, should I, in a county budget shortfall, should I support this or that? It's a matter of how you put those issues into perspective and how you can move monies around to try and accomplish all that you want to do.
Forrest Cotton.
Yeah, what Joe said is correct. It's a balanced budget, and when you make those decisions, those kind of decisions don't come midstream. There are changes that do, but those are made at budget time. So you know when you're doing it, how much money you have, and how much, where it needs to go. So you have youth services, you have senior services, you have everything else, and it's all a priority. So the question is, which one gets how much? I agree with Joe that senior service for Meals on Wheels are literally life and death issues. They take priority. But I don't believe they're mutually exclusive. I think they can still be done. Our youth grants are minimal right now. I think it's a total of $30,000 out of a $100 million budget that's spent. So I think it's money well worth spent.
Thank you. Down to the other end, Bill Lawrence.
I agree with Forrest on this one. The grants are a minimal part of the budget. They serve a greatly underserved segment of our population, the youth of our county. If you're not involved with sports, for the most part, you don't get much involvement through the county. And I think the money that we do give out to the various towns and their agencies is used in a very worthwhile way, whether it's the public library, the Girl Scouts, the Boy Scouts, or the sports teams. So I think it's a mountain out of a molehill. This is not going to reduce your taxes in any great way. It's going to make your children better than they would have been otherwise. And I think it's money that would have been spent in some other foolish way that you may not have agreed with.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
You got the two different programs. You got the youth fund that comes right directly from the legislature, and you have the youth bureau. Both, I feel, in my heart of hearts, is the right thing to do to make sure we have several other important agencies that are involved in providing service to youth, and we should not cut when there's such a minute portion of a $105 million budget. We all talked about, when we brought up the school issue, how important it is to get our kids educated. This is one more step in that process, is taking care of our kids, bringing our youth up, giving them the opportunity to be able to bring them up and make good leaders out of them. Several of the youth fund programs that we have implemented and paid for are actually got to do with an awful lot of leadership. Send them to Washington, send them to leadership schools. And each one is scrutinized. It's not just arbitrarily just given out. Every single youth grant that's given out is very, very much scrutinized, but from the county attorney to the administrator to there's a whole selection of people that have to go through. The Youth Bureau does the same thing. Those are funds that if we didn't give back to our local towns and villages, what would our kids do during the summer in the likes of towns of Durham, Greenville, where we have nothing else?
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
Yes, youth and senior programs are a priority for this county, as they provide monies well spent. Many of the kids who participate in these programs don't always make the school teams. They can't make the varsity team. They don't make the JV team, not always because they're not capable. Sometimes it's a monetary issue. It's a big commitment to commit to a school, 18, 15, 20 practices before school starts, and then on into the seasons. With both parents working, some of the kids can't get to those programs. So a lot of these other town programs are attended by the kids who can't always participate in the school programs, but they still want to participate in, whether it's playing against Durham, Carroll, Catskill, they all get together and play soccer, basketball, baseball. So to lose those programs, it would be the wrong thing to do.
Jim Mulligan.
Who asked this question? Joseph Heller? That went over everybody's head. Catch 22. I mean, how do you answer that question? $30,000 that you're going to give to kids, sports, and activities at a $105 million budget. Why should those kids in any way, shape, or form be the ones that suffer when there are 0.0005% of that budget? I mean, I don't think that's a fair question to ask anybody and to make that decision. The only other answer that came to me was the one from Oliver, let them eat gruel, you know, because that's not a fair question. I think when you have a budget and you have to cut funds back, the way to do that is to tell every single department head, everybody that's in any place responsible for that county budget, take 2%, take 3%, take 5% off your budget. I'm not sure how you do that, but do it.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
My problem with the youth fund is that it's often used for political purposes. I'm a taxpayer. I pay the money into the county. County legislator goes and receives some allocation for his district, goes and hands it out to some group of his determination, gets his picture in the paper, becomes a local hero because he gave him my tax money. I would prefer to have the money just given to the towns and the villages. They each almost universally have their own recreation departments and their own recreation programs. Give them the money, let them do what they need to do with it. We don't need to have politicians making political hay over every little $500 donation. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
In my district, within the town of Catskill, within the village of Catskill, there is a 30% poverty rate of children under the age of 18. I think that given those circumstances, we have a moral obligation to provide those funds for those kids that are a little less well off than, say, some of the other children in the district.
Thank you. The next question we will start with, who did we start with last time? You started?
We started with Joe, actually.
Yeah. We started with Joe. Okay, Forrest's turn.
That's what I thought.
What do you see as the future of tourism in Greene County, and what are your feelings about the cultural economy?
Tourism is in a very historical aspect of Greene County, a large part of our past, still part of our present. Unfortunately, in our town as well as across the county, we've lost a number of the smaller motel, bed and breakfast inns. There's been a lot of resurgence. There have been some setbacks. We just lost the Fire Tuck. But I think tourism still is alive and well. Palenville sits at the base of the mountain, and it's something that's just under-recognized and underutilized. We need to create a tourism center at the corner of Route 32A and 23A to welcome visitors to Greene County who are coming from the south, because they often don't make it up to Exit 21. And I think more people come from the south than do come from the north down to Catskill and down to Greene County. And Catskill sits right at the thruway. We are sort of the entranceway to the whole area. I think there has been an improvement for the cultural. We're sitting in it right now, and in fact, Olana, Beatty Powers, Thomas Cole, our arts and our arts walk, all of it is very successful. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Izzo.
Would you repeat the question just briefly, please?
What do you see as the future of tourism in Greene County, and what are your feelings about the cultural economy?
It's going to be fantastic. I am an absolute believer in cultural and recreational areas. The village of Catskill and the town of Catskill has been rewarded so much in the last couple of years because of the cultural and artistic and recreational programs that have happened. And I fully support and look forward to helping enhance our recreational and cultural environment.
Thank you. Robin DePue.
Tourism is alive and well in Greene County. If you were to go up 23A through Palinville, as Forrest notes, during the ski season, and it's during the week, it's not only on the weekends, it is bumper-to-bumper traffic from the foot of the mountain to the red light in Palinville going all the way to Saugerties. Most of the traffic does come up through exit 20. We don't get so much from 21. The tourist center, I think, should be on Woodland Avenue at the end of Forest Street. And and they can go by him to get their information how to get to Palinville.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, Greene County is certainly a wonderful destination for any tourist that is coming into this area. I've enjoyed the scenery in Greene County my whole life. The cultural events are really expanding left and right. However, one of the things that kind of holds us back is the physical appearance of some of our highways and some of our communities. We really need to try to work with the towns and work with the county highway department to see if we can't clean up some of these areas. There's too many dilapidated buildings and roadsides that are filled with trash. It just doesn't present a nice appearance for people coming here. It's not a very welcoming sight. You look at some of the entrances to this county, and you see junkyards that go on for miles buildings that are falling down and should have been removed a long time ago. We need to look at some of those things if we want people to respect our county and understand the beauty here. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mulligan.
Tourism. Let's face it, it's a great business, especially the ski business and the river business. You have a great resource in terms of the Hudson River that I think could be improved and utilized a little more. And the ski areas, they're doing really well. They provide the biggest base of our tourism. And I think that we should continue to help them prosper and grow. I think that the tourism in the valley areas like Greenville and Cairo and New Baltimore, I think that we need to promote sort of a bed and breakfast, an attractiveness in terms of creating better ideas of bike paths and hiking. I think Chris is right. I think we need to clean up the landscape a little bit.
Thank you. Kevin Lewis.
I don't disagree. Tourism is alive and well in Greene County. We actually operate a small business in Greenville, and we've been doing it since 1921. Unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder to get people here. So one of the things we should do as a county is market ourselves better than we do currently by hitting the markets that are coming looking for these little back town roads, private little resorts, stuff like that. We've done well with our ski resorts and promotion, but there is still a lot of other tourism available in Greene County. Guests love to come to Greene County. We should be able to provide them with more activities. Some of the activities would be some of these small businesses that we could start to give people something to do while they're here. The river is also a great thing. It should be televised, put into a market where we know the people are coming from. It used to be the metropolitan New York. Now it's shifted a little bit, northern Jersey, more out on the island. Those families love to come to Greene County. But we're not targeting that market at this time.
Thank you. Sean Fry.
I've said it for many, many years. We've been overlooked by many, many parts of New York State. We need to change our persona, how we're perceived. New York, if you look at Albany, the tri-capital region, I find that offensive. When we're on the rear end, on the south side of Albany, and we're not even considered the tri-capital region. We have so much to offer. We have so much to offer in this county. We have golfing. We've got some of the finest golf courses. We have some of the finest ski resorts. We have a Zoom Flume, which is now building a wave pool. We have some of the best attractions. You look at Durham, you've got the motorbike, the motor rally, the motorbike rally that they have at the Thunder Festival each year, and the amount of people that it brings into the county and the economics that come from that. It's not just supported in Durham. It actually overfills and overflows the other regions of that side of the county. And we need to support it. We need to get behind it 100% and keep on promoting our tourism in this county. We have a lot to offer.
Bill Lawrence.
Tourism and culture are intertwined. The paradigm has changed from the days when you used to come to a place, stay a week or a summer, and get your three meals in a bedroom and have a few activities, to where people want to come and find a point of interest. They want to find that niche where they have something different to do and they can stay just a short time and go home for a weekend, go home after the weekend's over. I think I've seen that develop in Greene County with there was a stroke of genius with the cats in Catskill, with the bears in Cairo, with the ski industry in the mountaintop, but of course that's snow dependent. And the other festivals that take place in Durham and the other parts of the county are important for bringing people in. Culture depends on the economy. The first thing people will cut out of their budget is the cultural activities if they don't have the money. And we've got to make sure that we have something to attract people here to spend the money so that the cultural, the arts, the theaters can grow. And I think it's all going to be dependent on how we see our vision of the future.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to all the questions that are left right here, but I would like to read them out loud so that our candidates are aware of other concerns in the community. And then we will conclude with 2 minutes closing statements. How will you act to improve debate and try to create an atmosphere of collaboration and coalition building on the legislature? What is your position on sales tax revenue sharing with the local municipalities in Greene County? The same-sex marriage law is about to pass. Where do you stand on it? Why are gas prices so high in Greene County as compared to surrounding counties? What mistakes do you think the county has made regarding the management of taxpayers' money, and how can such mistakes be avoided in the future? What can be done to stop the brain drain with our younger generations leaving the county for better opportunities elsewhere? What are the county's major infrastructure needs, and what can you do about them? The focus is on sports. What about arts as well as science and agriculture? For Athens, would you support the opening of the Rivertown Center parking lot for public use when not being used by seniors? Does anyone have a view whether it is a conflict for Ms. Overbeck to remain head of HOCA if she is elected to the legislature? Are water and sewer issues important to Athens and the county? Do county hiring practices need reform? Why or why not? What can you do to make green energy resources more affordable for the average homeowner in Greene County? What kinds of things have been or can be done to foster cooperation between children in our school districts rather than competition, such as the River of Dreams project? Any regrets regarding bringing Athens Gen to the county where the promise of jobs, reduced rates are unrealized? What is your position on Athens Gen? What do you think of the mortgage recording fee introduced by the Greene County Legislature? So you can see we had a lot of great questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to them all. So we will conclude with the candidates' closing statements, and we'll go in reverse order, starting with Robin DePue.
I would like to first thank the League of Women Voters for today's forum and for being a guest here and honoring me with an ability to present my views. I realize that there are many, many competent and proficient and qualified individuals that I am competing for with this job. I do think that I bring to the table a different perspective, that I have a strong background in environmental issues, and that's something that's very important to me. And for those in the community that that is important to, that I am a candidate that you should consider and strongly consider voting for.
Thank you. Forrest Cotton.
Well, thank you once again for providing the forum, League of Women Voters, WGXC, and again, thank you to Andrea and Jim for offering us this great spot. First, I'd like to say, as a sitting legislator, it's been an honor to serve over the last 3 years.
And I like to think that I've done a good service over those 3 years and would hope that that the public would agree. Things we focused on, we've gone over a lot in these questions. I only have 2 minutes, so open government we did hit on once, and I guess it was put into the paper. It is important. It's very important. Taxes is important. Each of the budget issues is important. But why is open government one of the overarching issues is because people don't know what's going on in our Greene County government. They're not aware. It's not just because they're not coming to the meetings. They aren't, I agree. But there could be better awareness, and we could be communicating much better with them. I think collaboration and coordination and the team effort's also missing. There is too much emphasis, as Sean said before, on the politics, on majority, minority. We actually, in this county, they hold work sessions. Bill mentioned the committees process. They hold work sessions of committees I'm not informed of as a sitting legislator. So how is that open government? There's just so much double talk, what you are told and what really happens. So we need to have people in the legislature who act responsibly, are accountable, and are responsive to the residents. They listen and they understand what's going on. And I think with that, you can actually have government that's working for you and doing what you want it to do, and you'll see a better result. Thank you. And I appreciate all of you coming today and listening to us. Thank you.
Joe Izzo.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the League again. And also, I would like to give my highest respect and thanks to all those individuals who are running for public office. It is an unusual person who will do that. And whether you win or you lose, I think the community has gained valuable insight into the people that we have living in Greene County. My philosophy in my 25 years of public service is people first. Those individuals who I meet and I talk to are my priorities. Those are the individuals who I will work for, listen to, and do the best for. It doesn't matter your race, your ethnicity, your political flavor. It is what I can do for you and how can I help you solve problems and make your life better. As I said yesterday, I will listen to your voice and you will hear my voice. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Feaster.
Well, again, I'd like to thank everybody that was responsible for this event, including the participants that came here today and missed a football game or missed a wonderful afternoon to spend it with a group of politicians. The other thing that comes to mind is that we've had a wonderful debate here today. I've heard very interesting answers. If we had this kind of debate in the Greene County Legislature every month, I think much of the lack of transparency would disappear in a hurry. And I think a lot of great ideas would come out of it. I mean, everybody today spoke in a very bipartisan way and in a constructive manner and hoped to provide something that really answered the question and addressed the issues. As I went through the town of Athens over the past couple of months, I met with hundreds of people and visited hundreds of houses and learned a lot about my town, learned that people are very concerned about the heavy burden of taxation, very concerned about development both ways, lack of development and also what development might mean to their properties and to their environment. And people are also very concerned about the lack of communication between their leaders and themselves. The stage was really set for a change in politics, a change to something different. We can't keep proceeding like this with one party bickering with the other party and not working together to make this county a better place to live. We need to treat people fairly. We need to treat them in a bipartisan way. We need to keep people informed. We need to keep our local governments informed. In my community especially, the local governments hardly ever see their county legislature. And finally, we need to hire people for what they know and not who they know. Thank you very much.
Jim Mulligan.
Oh, that's a tough one to follow. First of all, I want to thank the League of Women Voters for having this forum. I agree with Chris. It's great. If we had this kind of discussion and openness and lack of paranoia on a monthly basis, I think we'd be much farther ahead of the game. I'd also like to congratulate WGXC. That's going to be a tough handle to keep saying, but that's me. For your grant, and I'm really, really looking forward to having another outlet of media so that the people in this county can be informed of what's going on in terms of our government. Finally, I'd like to just thank all of the people that have helped me to get to this place. Believe me, I couldn't have done it without them, and I really appreciate everyone's effort. Finally, this is kind of a crazy idea, but I don't think it's so crazy. I've been advocating for the concept that all legislators get training. Doctors get it, lawyers get it, accountants get it on a regular basis. We have county legislators who are in charge of a $105 million budget, and nobody is mandated or even asked to go take a class in accounting, economics, financial projections. And I think that that's sad. None of us are, how would you say it, smart enough to be able to say, education, that's over. I think we need to realize that we educate ourselves every day to the grave, and that legislators should be able to do the same thing. And thank everyone for coming and participating.
Kevin Lewis.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the League of Lady Women Voters and WGXC. I agree with Jimmy. That's a mouthful to spit out. But it's been very helpful and informative for me to come here and listen to the questions and listen to everybody's response, because I don't disagree with what Chris said. A good debate with everybody, it turns out well. The answers are very similar, but sometimes they go about a different way of getting there. We've got to work to keep our youth and senior programs available to the people in this county. It's one of the important things. We also have to provide a window for our communities back, where Chris mentioned this also, that we don't hear what's happening at the town board level, what's happening at the county, until we get a declaration of what's already passed. I would like to provide a window for our citizens at attending the board meetings and letting them know with a report what's happening, you know, what's happening at the county level that the town people should know. We also, it's very important that local volunteer ambulances and firefighters are having a hard time. We've got to somehow come up. The county has stepped up and helped the towns with the EMS program, but now those little individual volunteer programs are suffering. They've got to look to solve a problem there. And we've got to keep tourism alive and well in Greenville. And we've got to reach more markets with our communication and advertising and do a better job. And I look forward to continue to serve in my community with the energy, enthusiasm, and commitment that I have to Greenville and Greene County. Thank you. Thanks again.
Sean Fry.
I'd also like to thank everybody for having us here, and also the audience for sitting here listening to us. The multiple things came up here today, and overwhelmingly it's about the communications, the way we're able to express ourselves and talk amongst each other. If we could just take this and take it upstairs to the fourth floor and put partisan politics behind us. I go to my town board meeting every other week. Twice a month we have a town board meeting. I'm actually part of the agenda. For every single meeting, the supervisor puts me up there and says, legislative report. And gives me the opportunity to bring back what happens here at the legislature to the community. And it put me in the, so it gives me the forum to do so. At the same token, to listen to their concerns so I can bring it back to the legislature and say, this is what our constituents, my constituents, are where they're coming from and what they have to say. And I think it's important we listen to that both sides. But again, ultimately, if you're not willing to put that partisan aside, you know, the partisan politics aside, and realize that we are, Mr. Izzo, you're 100% right. We are here for the people. And all too often, a lot of us forget it.
all too often we're here for, you know, I've been accused of political mandering and, you know, out there grandstanding and everything else. The reason why I get so boiled, because I'm a very passionate man when I deal with this job, I believe it takes passion to be a member of the legislature. I think it takes passion to take on the arguments that are out there and to take on the fight of what's going on within the county. And all too often it's that political partisan that puts that roadblock in front of you because you're in the minority. And so you can't get once you can't get past that, you get frustrated, but you will not. I refuse to stand there and let that be the roadblock. Get the point across. There's multiple issues that came up here tonight with the last questions. The mortgage tax. I gave my answers very, very clear. I voted against it. You cannot keep on putting taxes and the burden on the taxpayers of Greene County. We have to balance the budget. We have to balance the budget somehow, some way, so that we can keep our kids in this county and that they are able to afford to keep their homes and stay in their homes. I've been told to stop, and so thank you very much.
Bill Lawrence.
I also want to thank the League of Women Voters for inviting me today. I had a very good time today. I want to thank Union Mills owners for not adding to the global warming problem. And although I was glad to see Joe Izzo kept to a time limit, I don't want to see this timing lady again. And I want to thank everybody for coming here today and giving us those very, very good questions. I know everybody who's running or who's on the board right now, and they're all fine ladies and gentlemen. There's nobody that's going to serve you ill if you vote for them and they become a legislator. The job of being a public servant is a very tough one. It's not easy. And it maybe looks easy to some from the outside, but you've got to remember that a big part of that job is yours as well. You've got to participate. You've got to ask questions. You've got to make those phone calls. It's not us and you people. It's we the people, mechanism that we're looking to make work here, our democracy, depends on your involvement. And if you don't show up and you complain about what we do after the fact, then you're not doing your job. And I think if you keep us to our job by doing your job, we'll all be better off. Thank you.
Thank you. In conclusion, I'd like to thank WGXC. And I'll say that those call letters, the G stands for Greene County, the X is Crossing the River, C is Columbia County, so that makes it a little easier to remember. GXC. They're giving a voice to all the communities in both counties. So thanks to WGXC for sponsoring this event and for broadcasting it online. Thanks to the community for the great questions. Thanks to the Daily Mail and the Greene County Courier for reporting on this forum. Thanks to the candidates for your involvement and your commitment. Thanks to Andrea and Jim Cunliffe for this site, this great site. And thanks to Rudy for the great art hanging on the walls.
Yeah, can I just say one thing? While everybody's here, look at this artwork. It is incredible.
We're very lucky.
Oh, just...